it's time to join one of the fathers of the church who Pope Benedict spoke about at length in northern Italy on Sunday when he went to Pavia. For 12 centuries, this city has been the resting place of St. Augustine of Hippo, father and doctor of the church. And naturally it was to this father of the church that the Pope dedicated most of his homily at the Mass he celebrated there.
La città di Pavia parla di uno dei più grandi convertiti della storia della Chiesa, Sant'Aurelio Agostino. Egli morì.
Augustine, whose writings are considered to be central to the developing of both Western theology and Western thought in the first millennium, among them the City of God and of Free Choice of the Will. But perhaps most widely read are his confessions. I personally even came across this big fat book in a taxi here in Rome. Asking the taxi driver if someone had left the book behind, he told me that it was his current reading. And on Sunday in Pavia, it was precisely to these confessions that Pope Benedict referred to in his homily.
Nel suo libro Confessioni, Agostino ha illustrato in modo toccante il cammino della sua conversione.
As he focused on this saint's conversion, of which he described three phases in detail, the gist of the message being that, like Augustine, we too may be tormented by a personal quest for the truth in a personal relationship with God. And that's why we as Christians today should emulate him. There is no need for me to say how much this regards us, the Pope said in Italian. We should remain people who seek, who are not content with what others do and say.
Che Agostino in una lunga lotta interiore dovette percorrere per ricevere finalmente nella notte di Pasqua 386.
As we all know, Pope Benedict himself was greatly influenced by the figure of St. Augustine, as constantly referred to him in his writings and speeches. And though he lived some nearly 1,600 years ago, I'm told that, but haven't verified, that Augustine's life and writing influenced beyond my Roman taxi driver artists through the ages, including Bob Dylan, Sting, and even the Rolling Stones, not exactly a gallery of church fathers. So what was this conversion Pope Benedict spoke about at length on Sunday, referring to St. Augustine and his confessions? And anyway, why not discover more about this giant figure from our family tree of faith? One of my colleagues knows quite a bit about him. She's Jill Bevilacqua. Stay tuned.
In an introduction to a modern collection of the writings of the Bishop of Hippo, these words appear.
Man, who is but a portion of your creation, wishes to praise you. You excite him so that he may find pleasure in praising you, because you made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you.
If we were faced with the unlikely proposition of having to destroy completely either the works of Augustine or the works of all the other fathers and writers, I have little doubt that all the others would have to be sacrificed. Augustine must remain.
Perhaps the most familiar name of all, and certainly the most quoted, Augustine is of all the fathers the most approachable because the most human. No one of all the fathers has so won the minds and hearts of men of all times and all nations as the gentle, lovable Bishop of Hippo.
Who then was Augustine?
Born at Tagaste in Numidia on November the 13th, 354, Aurelius Augustinus was the son of Patricius, a well-born pagan who became a Christian shortly before his death, and Monica, almost as famous as her son, and of whom it was said, "It is impossible that the son of these tears should perish." For Augustine, as one biography puts it, in spite of the influence of his mother, lived until the age of 32, a life defiled morally by license and intellectually by Manichaeism.
But Augustine, as a reliable modern scholar tells us, was no worse than his fellow students of respectable families, and probably much better than most of them. At 17, he went to Carthage to pursue more advanced rhetorical studies. In Carthage, our scholar tells us, he was soon led into the luxury of the immoral life of that city. But his reminiscences on this matter need not be taken too literally. Nevertheless, we know that, much to his mother's chagrin, he took a concubine who gave him a son, Adeodatus. At 19, he was attracted by philosophy, and after reading Cicero, aspired to become a true lover of wisdom. He read the scriptures, but they did not satisfy him. He had been a catechumen, but postponed his baptism, and in 374 joined the Manichaeans, who claimed to lead men to the study and knowledge of truth. But when he finally met Faustus, the leader of the sect, Augustine was disillusioned by the ignorance of the man, and soon after went to Rome, and later to Milan, where he secured the chair of rhetoric. Here he heard the sermons of Ambrose, and gradually the preaching of the great bishop began to take effect.
Ambrose was a lawyer, a philosopher, a man of the highest rank, and his coherent account of the scriptures, presenting God as the true source of all wisdom, disturbed and drew Augustine. At the same time, he was reading Neoplatonist works, and his mind was gradually lifted from the things of the world of sense to the world of reason, from the material to the spiritual. After long conflict, he heard one day a mysterious voice telling him to take up and read. He took up and read the passage from Romans chapter 13, and his doubts were at last ended. He gave up his teaching, took his mother and son, and with some friends retired to an estate near Milan. During Lent, he received instruction, and on Easter night 387, he was baptized by Ambrose. A few months later, he set out for Africa. His mother died at Ostia, after they had together experienced contemplation of God.
The story of Augustine's conversion he tells himself in his Confessions, one of the great books of all time, an autobiography which is at the same time a hymn of praise to God. A book, it is said, that reveals the depths of the human soul, perhaps more completely than any book yet written. Rather than a confession of faults, it is an acknowledgement of God, and tells of the work of salvation God wrought in bringing its author from sin to grace. At the beginning, he lays down the principle, "You have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless till it rests in you." Augustine then proves by his own experience the truth of this principle.
"I found myself far from you in a region of dissension, and it was as if I heard your voice from on high. I am the food of adults. Grow, and you shall eat me. You will then not change me into yourself, like the food of your flesh, but you shall be changed into me. And I came to know that you corrected man for his wickedness, and you made my soul shrivel up like a moth. And I said, is truth nothing at all then, because it has no extension in space, either finite or infinite? And you called out from afar, I am who am. And I heard as one hears in his heart, and there was no longer any grounds in me for doubt. I would more easily have doubted my own existence than I would have doubted that truth is that which is clearly seen, being understood through the things that are made."
After a few years of monastic life back in Tagaste, Augustine was ordained priest by Bishop Valerius of Hippo, who insisted only 4 years later on consecrating him as coadjutor bishop. I was caught and made a priest, and once that step had been taken, I was made a bishop. To his friends who congratulated him, Augustine retorted that he had made a shipwreck of himself, and that the God who made him had remade him. One of his reasons for writing the Confessions had been to avoid vainglory.
Augustine succeeded Valerius in 395 and was soon expounding the Bible to his flock. From the time he was ordained until his death 40 years later, Augustine preached regularly on Sundays and feast days and frequently throughout the week. His extant sermons amount to something more than 1,000, but it has been calculated that had all his sermons been recorded, they would probably run to 7,000 or 8,000.
Apart from the conversion of his own flock, Augustine believed his mission to be that of the conversion of heretics and pagans, of whom he had once been one. Frequently, he debated in public with the Manichees, the Donatists, and the Pelagians, whom he pursued until the heresy was condemned in Rome. The aged Jerome wrote to him on hearing the news, "Hail to thee! The world resounds with thy praise. The Catholics admire thee as the restorer of the ancient faith." Augustine was a passionate orator, but unlike Jerome, had no instinct for invective. He believed that heresies were the products of thinking men, and in reply to them, he offered his thoughts.
Augustine's greatest work, The City of God, was written in answer to an objection raised by the pagans, who accused the Christians of being responsible for the fall of the empire. Christians, they said, had sapped its strength by the doctrine of meekness and non-violence, and the old gods had avenged themselves. Augustine retorted that Rome was made great not by the gods, but by her republican virtues, and then by her Christian subjects. The cause of her present defeat, he said, was her unbridled luxury and failure to accept Christianity. Augustine then went on to delineate two cities founded on two kinds of love: the city of God, founded on the love of God and of truth, and the city of earth, founded on the love of self and of pleasure. Tell me what a people loves, and I shall tell you what it is. The City of God is recognized as the earliest known theology of history. It's an explanation of how one can be in this world and not of it. Augustine tells us what is awaiting us in the world to come.
How great will be that happiness where there will be no evil, where no good will remain hidden, where there will be leisure for the praises of God, who shall be all in all. What power of movement such bodies will have there, I have not the rashness to boldly define, because I have not the ability to conceive of it. Nevertheless, I will say that both in motion and at rest, in their appearance, they shall be handsome, in that place where anything that is not handsome will not be. Certainly the body shall immediately be wherever the spirit wills it to be. Nor will the spirit will anything which were unbecoming, either to the spirit or to the body. There the reward of virtue shall be God himself, the author of virtue. And he promised himself, than whom there can be nothing better or greater. For thus too is that to be rightly understood which the Apostle says, that God may be all in all. He himself will be the end of our desires. He shall be seen without end. He shall be loved without surfeit. He shall be praised without weariness. There we shall rest and we shall behold. We shall behold and we shall love. We shall love and we shall praise. This is what shall be in the end without end.
In Augustine's last years, the empire was close to collapse. In 430, the Vandals laid siege to Hippo, where the 76-year-old bishop was fatally ill. But Augustine refused to flee the city. When the people remain and the ministers flee and the ministration is suspended, what is that but the guilty flight of hirelings who care not for the sheep? Augustine prayed God to liberate the city, or give his subjects fortitude to endure, or otherwise to take me to himself from this world. And on the 28th of August, 430 AD, Augustine was taken from this world.
The genius of Augustine is acknowledged by all scholars of past and present. None wrote so well or so much, and in modern times none other has been so much written about. He was unique in his time, and none like him has since been seen.
He was the source from which almost the entire range of theological knowledge in the Middle Ages was derived.
He combined holiness with knowledge, speculation with faith, and action with contemplation in an unparalleled degree.
With princely generosity, he scattered along his way ideas in which later thinkers found the materials for entire systems of doctrine.
His words were often the origin of dogmatic controversy that have agitated powerfully more than one generation of mankind.
Ecclesiastical authority, both conciliar and pontifical, has always reckoned him among the chief doctors of the Church.
He was one of those mighty spirits that appear only at great intervals of time, but are destined to influence very profoundly the destiny of humanity.
This, then, was Augustine.
Our thanks there to Jill Bibilacqua and to Jean-Patrick Lavert, who produced the programme and was also one of the speakers. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening.